This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
Welcome to the Audio Imaginarium. Come on in, weary traveler, hang your cloak on a peg. Grab a stool and come gather around the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. Happy New Year to each and every one of you, wishing you all the best. Much peace, good health, and prosperity for 2020. Owen Wolf is my technical producer. Ryan White is the live stream producer. But please note, there's no live stream on YouTube tonight. The YouTube live stream will resume next week. Tonight, a remarkable story that would rival any Ian Fleming spy novel. The story of Ambassador Lee Wanta, a man who, according to this narrative, brought down the Soviet Union, ending the Cold War without firing a shot. After being appointed by President Ronald Reagan as a secret agent, Wanta engineered a series of complex financial transactions, including foreign currency swaps, which essentially bankrupted the Soviet Union. According to the plan, Wanta also accumulated tens of trillions of dollars through these transactions, and a portion of this money was to be used for the benefit of the American people, as we'll hear. However, a number of corrupt political figures have sought to prevent Wanta from fulfilling his mandate and have been attempting to get their hands on these trillions for their own personal gain. The ambassador is presently in a secret and secure location. He'll be joining the program in the second hour. This hour, we're joined by his official biographer, Lon Gibby of Gibby Media Group, and he's here to tell us some of the details and timeline of this story. And again, the man himself, the $33 trillion man, will join us in the second hour. Lon Gibby, welcome back to The Conspiracy Show. How are you?
Great, Richard. Awesome to be with you. Thank you so much for the invitation.
It has been a few years, and we may have some people listening not familiar with the incredible story of Ambassador Lee Wanta. So why don't you just sort of give us the thumbnail sketch about Ambassador Wanta and how he became President Ronald Reagan's secret agent through the Totten Doctrine.
Absolutely. Well, his name is Ambassador Lee Wanta. He's known as Lee Wanta, sometimes Leo Emil Wanta. Both names are applicable to him. Ambassador Wanta was a secret agent under President Ronald Reagan, serving not as a spy, but as a secret agent under what is known as the Totten Doctrine. And the Totten Doctrine was initiated back at the time of Abraham Lincoln, when he enlisted a man named Totten to do some special work behind the Confederate lines, which only a secret agent could do, because as a private citizen and a secret agent, they were able to accomplish things that you wouldn't be able to do as a government employee. So I wanted to establish right off the bat that Ambassador Lee Wanta was not an employee of the United States government. He was a secret agent under the Totten Doctrine. Doesn't mean that he wasn't under oath. And also, he took an oath, and he has a mandate from President Reagan, but he was not considered an employee of the U.S. government. This is interesting.
And he was recruited during the Cold War, near the end of the Cold War, to together, I guess, or Lee on his own, hatched a scheme to bring down the Soviet Empire, what Reagan referred to as the evil empire. What, and it's kind of a complicated series of currency swaps, et cetera, but just kind of simplify it as best you can.
Yeah, in a nutshell, basically the best way that Reagan could figure out how to take down the Soviet Union was to financially take it down, because they just kept buying more arms. The arms race was out of control. We were just a button away from just annihilating the entire world with a nuclear war. And so the whole idea was, well, let's bankrupt this country, the evil empire, and take them down. And so with Lee Wonka, he brought him in because Lee had some unique gifts or talents, whatever you want to call them. He was able to, first of all, he has a photographic memory, ability to remember numbers. He also has mathematics, has an amazing understanding of that. But even more important than any of his gifts and talents is that he was somebody that President Reagan could trust. Somebody that Reagan would know that he could send into this environment, and he would do exactly as he was asked to do. And there was no surprises with Lee. Because he kept his mandate. So, in a nutshell, what they did is that they were able to buy up rubles at a reduced rate, and then of course resell those rubles and generate income in the process. And so they pretty much, he got some seed money. This seed money was through a credit mechanism that was established with China under Deng Xiaoping and President Reagan. That might surprise you that President Reagan was working directly with Deng Xiaoping. And there was a counterpart to Lee in China. His name was Howie Kwok. And the two together worked hand in hand. And by the way, what you might ask yourself, well, why in the world would China be wanting to take down the Soviet Union? At the time, a lot of people don't remember that the Soviet Union was encroaching on China and causing a lot of problems. There was a possibility of a big war breaking out between China and Russia at any time.
Right. So the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And so the United States used that as rationalizing why they would hook up with the Chinese.
Exactly. So people don't understand that unless you go back in history, because they would think, oh, gee, China and Russia have always been such great friends. Well, everybody forgets the Russian war of the past. They forget about all the problems that they've had at their border skirmishes and all that. So in the context of that time period, it made total sense for President Reagan to join forces with China at that particular time. And that doesn't mean, we embrace communism or any of that. It was just that it was a way of getting rid of the evil empire, which incidentally isn't the Russian Federation, is the government that we call it now. It's completely different. It's not the Soviet Union, it's the Russian Federation. So anyway, getting back to that, to the story, how this happened, it was able to get about $150 billion in credit mechanism to be able to use a seed money to start to affect, the absolute disintegration of the Soviet Union's financial system. And they did that through the ruble exchanges.
So he was, I understand it correctly, Lon, what Lee was doing, well, I guess the ruble was pegged at about $1.20 U.S., but inside the Soviet Union, you couldn't buy anything because, their economy was a mess. So using that seed money, Ambassador Wonta was able to buy from people and organizations inside the Soviet Union, buy the rubles back for about 25, 26, 27 cents a ruble instead of $1.20.
Exactly. Yeah, it's amazing what they did. And by the way, I'm serving as Lee's communication director, as well as I helped him, Gibby Media, my company. in the United States. We helped do some of the media work for Lee, including his biography. So we had we worked on this for about 5 years. So I've had a chance to look at a lot of the documents and of course spend lots of time with Lee. I still do on a regular basis. And I can tell you that, you know, the information behind it is all factual. And people are pretty surprised to understand how this all happened. There's a lot of different versions, and people have tried to take credit for it. But it was really President Reagan, with his secret agent, Ambassador Lee Wanta, who affected the removal of the Soviet Union, or the destruction, whatever you want to call it, the takedown of the Soviet Union. And it was all done financially.
Right. And then
they couldn't even afford gas for their tanks at the tail end. And they couldn't even pay their people. Their soldiers had to walk off the job. They didn't have any money.
So buying up all of these rubles, you've got rubles leaving, I guess, the Soviet Union. And this caused the currency to collapse, essentially.
It caused the currency to collapse, and for example, you'd have to have a truckload of rubles just to be able to buy anything. I was in the Soviet Union in 1988 producing a documentary on the food professionals sharing food between our two countries. When we were there, if you wanted to buy a VCR, for example, a videotape, you know, a VHS VCR, you would have had to have, you know, probably 5,000 or 10,000 rubles to even be able to purchase one. So everybody was trying to get a hold of U.S. currency at the time, because that was the only way that people could buy anything. It was really hard to buy anything outside of Russia, you know, outside of the Soviet Union without some other currency.
And then Lon was using the proceeds from this currency swap, buying the rubles at 25, 26, 27 cents. They're worth $1.20, or they're pegged at $1.20. And then he's buying huge amounts of gold, correct?
They were buying gold and also purchasing, other tangible property. It was all going to, the assets of varying types. But gold, there was purchase of gold as well.
So he's doing sort of two things simultaneously. He's destabilizing the ruble, and basically pulling the rug out from underneath the Soviet Union, so they can no longer keep up with the United States in terms of weapons procurement and so forth. And at the same time, he's amassing this unimaginable fortune, which would eventually, with interest, total, where are we at today? Something like $33 trillion it's now worth?
Well, this is, it's around $33 trillion. If you look at the value of that today, because of all of the transactions that have been done, and the value of it has been listed in the World Bank, is at $4,433 trillion.
$443 trillion. All right, we'll come back to that in a moment. But back to the Cold War. And so when Reagan made that famous speech at the Berlin Wall, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall, he already knew the Soviet Union was collapsing, right?
Oh, absolutely. And they knew that was happening, as well as they also knew that Gorbachev himself was very close to being willing to step down, which was one of the key things that had to happen. In order for the Soviet Union to collapse and the Russian Federation to be launched, by the way, in which Lee is a signature on the original General Agreement of Cooperation, Lee actually was a signer on that. That certain things had to take place. Number one, Gorbachev had to step back and go into retirement, or just go start his own foundation or disappear. Well, that all happened because Lee had to go in again as a Totten Doctrine private citizen, not and a secret agent, not as a spy or anything. He got the trust of the Kremlin. He was able to go into the Kremlin, have a meeting with Gorbachev, in which case he was given the opportunity to say what he would like to step down. And he said $10 billion, and immediately Lee said accepted. And that money was immediately transferred into his account, and he stepped down. That happened. That's
right.
Part of history that nobody knows about.
And did Gorbachev realize what had happened, that it was Ambassador Lee Wanta that had orchestrated these currency swaps and this financial dealings that collapsed the ruble?
Well, I don't know if he knew all the details at the time. I can't answer that. Maybe Lee, that's a good question for Lee when he comes on later.
Right.
But I'm not certain if how much Gorbachev understood all of that. But I just knew that he just was willing to step down because he knew that the Soviet Union had no future, that it was the evil empire. I mean, he accepted that communism wasn't the route for the Russian people. And this new Russian Federation is not the Soviet Union, by the way, a lot of people want to make it into. It's the Russian Federation. But apparently Gorbachev felt that that was the best direction for the hit for the Russian people. Doesn't mean that he abandoned them or left, I believe. And, of course, he lives in Presidio. He lives in California, and he's, you know, has the foundation, and he's been doing work with the
right.
money that he got.
The Iron Curtain fell and the Cold War was over and the Soviet Union collapsed thanks to Lee Wanta, did Lee then extend an olive branch to the newly formed Russian Federation in the form of some sort of aid to help them get their back on their
absolutely.
Feet?
Oh, absolutely. That's a really important point, because what the general agreement of cooperation that was signed, and by the way, if you go to Eagle One to Wanta, that's the website. We'll talk about that later, but they can actually read a draft of that agreement. But that's on that site. But anyway, that particular agreement said that the Russian Federation, a democratic type government, would be proceeding forward, and that they would have the ability to, sell goods to their neighbors. You know, they have the neighbors like Georgia and Uzbekistan, and they have the Ukraine is a neighbor. Be like us, you know, selling to Canada. I think the United States being able to continue to sell oil and gas to Canada, that was guaranteed in that agreement that they can do business together. And plus, there was what was called the Reagan-Mitterrand Protocol. And the Reagan-Mitterrand Protocol assured that certain countries that helped take the Soviet Union down, because it took some cooperation between the French, Canadians were even involved, surprisingly. A lot of people don't know that, but the Canadians played a part in it. The English, England, and of course, the Russian Federation itself was guaranteed $50 billion of the Reagan-Mitterrand Protocol money. $50 billion. And each country in France was guaranteed a certain amount, and Lee can tell you the exact amounts that are on that. But those countries were all to receive some funds out of the takedown. And then Reagan was very smart, and of course, Lee is a private citizen, so this is really his money. A lot of people have tried to say, well, that belongs, you know, that just needs to be converted over to the corrupt Federal Reserve System, by the way, which is not federal, and it's not a reserve, and it's not a bank. And a lot of people think it's a real legitimate organization and that they should have that money. But this is private citizen money. It did have a mandate associated with it. And that mandate was that it was supposed to be spent on furthering our country. The Reagan-Mitterrand Protocol money had to be paid. And then we would put, Lee was willing to put this money, a big percentage of it, into paying his taxes, which would have taken out any debt which we had. Plus, he was to build a high-speed rail system, create tons of jobs, also to help with the student loan issues, because that's been, you know, there's a lot of people that have been caught in that trap.
Sure. It's a huge bubble.
To get the banking system, you know, figured out.
Right.
Probably help with the medical program. All kinds of good things needed to be done with this money.
So let me just recap. So if I could,
yeah.
Lon Gibby is with us from Gibby Media, and he is the, among other things, documentary filmmaker. The documentary is called Eagle One Tawanta, and I believe you can still see trailers for that at eagle1tawanta.com. That's the website. Also,
and that's spelled out, Richard, too. It's just Eagle1Tawanta spelled out.
Right. In other words, Eagle One being the code word for the president, Eagle1Tawanta. Eagle1Tawanta.com, and also Lon is the publisher and I guess editor of the official authorized biography of Lee Wanta called Wanta, Black Swan, White Hat. And that book is just chock full of documents. If all of this sounds too incredible to believe, that book contains copies of so many different documents, court documents, etc., which really validate everything that is being said here. So, as I have mentioned,
thank you, Richard, for bringing that up. You know, the nice thing about that book, by the way, it's available on Amazon.com, iBooks, and also Barnes & Noble, but a hard copy is available at Gibby Media. But it comes with a disc with all of those documents. We wanted to make sure that people could read them for themselves. So if you don't have the digital copy, of course, has the links to those documents. But the hard copy or the paperback copy has an actual disc with it that has all of those documents as evidence that back up everything.
Right. And it truly does. This story rivals an Ian Fleming spy thriller. Now, let me just recap. So Lee Wanta, hired by President Reagan under the Totten doctrine to act as a secret agent and through a series of complex financial dealings and currency swaps and purchasing gold and so forth, brought down the Soviet Union. Just they were financially collapsed. Essentially, they had to surrender. And at the same time, amassed this incredible treasure in the tens of trillions of dollars, although it's been valued as high as $433 trillion. That money, under the Reagan-Mitterrand protocol, was to be sort of repatriated, and then the taxes paid on that would amount to enough to pay off the United States debt, and then a portion of that would also to be used for massive infrastructure programs. We hear President Trump talking about infrastructure programs. This money would fund that. Perhaps it would have also funded the wall, a high-speed train, pay off the student loans, which is a huge debt bubble that's going to have could have a major impact on the U.S. economy. So that's where we're at so far. Now we're going to take a time out here, and when we come back, we'll talk about where that money is and why it didn't get to the U.S. Treasury or wherever it was supposed to go. How did Lee essentially lose control of those untold trillions of dollars? Lon Gibby from Gibby Media Group, my guest. And a little bit later in the program, towards the second hour of the show, we will hear from the man himself, who is in a secret and secure location. He is listening in on this conversation, and he will join us. We'll get it right from the horse's mouth, so to speak. Back with more of The Conspiracy Show. My name is Richard Serrett. Don't go away.
Where there's smoke, there's The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio.
We are back with Lon Gibby, who is the, the communications specialist for Ambassador Lee Wanta, and he is also the head of Gibby Media Group and the publisher of the book Wanta, Black Swan, White Hats, and also the documentary, which is called Eagle One Tawanta, eagle1tawanta.com, the website. So the Cold War ends. Lee is sitting on this huge treasure worth an estimated, well, by today's dollars again, around $33 trillion. So then what happens? What is he? Is he at this point trying to get back into the country to repatriate the money?
That's a good question. One of the first things that happened, his counterpart, Mr. Howie Kwok, who Lee worked together with very closely to make this all happen. It was a team effort to be able to take down the Soviet Union with Chinese involvement because of Howie Kwok, who was a member of the top warlord family. He was, very respected in China. Anyway, they got together with H.W. President Bush at the time, and were told that all of their holdings should be that they owed him a big chunk of that money. It, personally, it was not, wasn't like, hey, give me this money. He wanted this to go to him. And when Howie Kwok heard that, he got upset and called him a name, which I won't repeat. And 2 days later, he was poisoned to death and died. So and then.
So let me just make sure I understand this, Lon. So
yeah.
So Reagan serves out his second term. He steps down. An election. George Herbert Walker Bush. That's Bush 41. Poppy Bush is elected. And defeats the Democratic candidate, Michael Dukakis. And right. he demands a cut. For what reason? What was his rationale?
Well, you got to remember that H.W. Bush, and again, Lee can speak more to this than probably I can, but I could just tell you that his real name was Shurp. His family, Prescott Bush, was involved with helping to fund the Nazis and were involved in some financial dealings in the past. You probably talked about that before on
your
show. So that's nothing new. But what is new is that, as president of the United States, he personally was interested in getting control of this money, not so much to help our country, but he wanted personally to, remember, he was involved with the CIA and the CIA, well, more and more people are starting to understand that the part of the CIA obviously is almost like a criminal organization, and they fund themselves and they do lots of things in other countries that we as Americans citizens wouldn't agree to.
Right.
But they do. So with his involvement and all the things he was doing, he felt that a big chunk of their money that Lee and Howie Kwok had amassed from this should go to him personally. And when refused it, then Howie Kwok was eliminated, and then Ambassador Lee Wanta was rushed to out of that country, and actually went to Toronto. And a lot of people don't know this, but Dan Quayle, the vice president at the time, was responsible for saving Lee's life. Moved him to Toronto, where he lived for over almost a year and a half in the Toronto area. Under special protection. And so Lee has a love for the Canadian people, because he was there for a year and a half. And when it looked like things could move forward with the funding, he went to Switzerland. The Clinton family was reaching out, trying to get Lee's, they knew about Lee's money, of course, and we know today that the Clintons and the Bushes are pretty much the same. They work together. But at the time, the Clintons had a foundation, and they had within their foundation, they still have that foundation, but it was called the Children's Defense Fund. And so a lady named Vermeer at the White House contacted Lee and asked that he go and meet with Vince Foster in Switzerland, where Lee, because Lee's a philanthropist, he heard, he has a lot of money, so he figured, well, I'll donate some money to the Clinton Foundation, to the Children's Defense Fund. So he went to Switzerland. He was doing business there as well, on other business transactions, but he went there specifically to meet with Vince Foster. And then on his way from his hotel to meet with Vince Foster at the hotel he was arrested. But the $250 million that he donated to the Children's Defense Fund was couriered to the hotel where Vince Foster was, and that did arrive and was taken back to Washington, D.C. with Vince Foster.
In other words, Foster was a bag man for the Clintons, although he may not have known that money never made it to the children.
Well, it never went anywhere that we know of, and there's been no accounting of that money.
Right.
Nobody's accounted for it. And, of course, Vince Foster allegedly committed suicide probably, I think it was 10 days later, by shooting himself twice in the head, which is kind of an interesting
in the back of the
way
head.
To do it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, so Lee was arrested. His briefcase that he had in his hand at the time contained $16 billion in U.S. Treasury notes, because Lee traveled with a lot of, you know, he traveled with different financial mechanisms with him in his briefcase. And he also had his medal that he got from President Reagan, who he had saved his life from an assassination attempt, which a lot of people don't know about. There were a number of assassination attempts, not the one that almost succeeded, but one that the public doesn't know about, which we're going to be talking about in our new documentary, where Lee helped. Anyway, he had a medal in there, and he had a lot of his personal notes and all of his business papers and all that. They took his briefcase away, arrested him, and he resided in a Swiss dungeon for a period of around 138 days.
And there were no charges. The Swiss police came in and basically kidnapped him and threw him in the dungeon.
He was flat out kidnapped. I mean, there's no explanation. There's no, and he, by the way, he was an ambassador. Anybody can look it up and see that he was an ambassador, because even the Supreme Court, when he's had a number of appearances in the Supreme Court with the Supreme Court and other, they call him an ambassador and they put his ambassador number on. I mean, they had to, because he's an ambassador.
Right. But let me ask you about that, if I could, Lon, that has always interested me. I don't know that I've actually heard how or why he was an ambassador. And it has to do with Somalia. He was the Somali ambassador to what country?
To Switzerland and also to and Canada. So he was working as an ambassador so he could conduct some. And you remember that his background was law enforcement. Besides being a whiz kid, you know, and with a lot of gifts of mathematics and being able to memorize things, he was actually worked for the Waukesha County Sheriff's Department and actually had a sheriff badge. So he was somebody that they trusted to work on some other things that could help our government, especially the military and other applications. And so he served as an ambassador, and he can tell you more about his work on Mogadishu and some of the things he was trying to do as that ambassador. But they stripped him of his passports, and those were in his briefcase too, by the way. And
right.
So
he would have had diplomatic immunity. I mean, there's as an ambassador,
you can't arrest an ambassador.
Right.
It's totally that's a major a treasonous act. I mean, you can't do that. Well, Switzerland apparently felt they could, or was compelled to do that, which made me feel really sad about that, because I love the Swiss people, but I just can't believe that they allowed that to happen. And so here he is in a Swiss dungeon, a pre-Nazi era dungeon in a dark room, no windows, and was there for 138 days, no communication whatsoever. The only thing they did is that somebody walked in and told him, by the way, Vince Foster is dead. So they wanted him to know that, kind of just to make him feel bad. That's the only thing he really learned. The other thing is that they gave him some cheese, some special cheese, but they didn't know that he was lactose intolerant. So instead of unwrapping that really nice wrapped cheese, he gave it to one of the prison officials who was there, and he was really happy to get it. And that night, that prison official passed away, died.
Oh my!
Of poison.
Lon, we have to take a time out here. When we come back, we'll find out how Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin comes to his rescue, and from there, Lon is headed to New York.
Right.
We'll pick up on this story on the other side. Lon Gibby from Gibby Media Group, the official spokesperson for Ambassador Lee Wanta, Ronald Reagan's secret agent, the $33 trillion man. Back with more of The Conspiracy Show. Stay with us.
Peering into the shadows, where the truth often hides. You're listening to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio.
Lon Gibby is with us, and the official biography of Ambassador Lee Wanta is Wanta, Black Swan, White Hat, and the documentary is Eagle One to Wanta. The website is eagle1towanta.com. Just a reminder that Ambassador Wanta is standing by on the phone in a secret and secure location, and he will join us in the second hour. And right now we continue to sort of lay the groundwork here. For those not familiar with the backstory, Lon Gibby is with us from Gibby Media Group. And so he's languishing in the basement of this Swiss prison for 138 days. He survives an attempt on his life. They tried to poison him. And then all of a sudden, he gets a letter from Yitzhak Rabin. What's that all about?
Well, he had reached out to Mr. Rabin because of their knowing him well, and asked for help. He appealed to him. And so Rabin actually sent a letter and responded to Lee and did approach the prison, and I'm not sure how he did it, but he was able to get Lee released and was helpful in that process. Lee can explain more about what happened during that, but there was a letter. There is a copy of one of the letters that came back from Rabin specifically to Lee, and it's on the website.
And he got his $16 billion back
He didn't get any money back. His briefcase was sent with him on to New York City, and that's where they decided to have him go first to report back in. So he was sent on a flight to New York City. When he got to New York City, he was immediately escorted and picked up, and he didn't have his briefcase on him at the time, but it was with him somewhere. Somebody had it. It was escort. So he gets to New York and immediately is taken to New York City police and put in an area where it's underground. It's a place where you can't get communication. It's cell phones don't work or anything. It's just a real, back then they didn't have cell phones, but there's just no way to communicate with anybody.
So in other words, the moment he lands in the United States, they slap the cuffs on him again. He's released from Swiss prison, he's arrested again by the New York City police. He's taken to a station, and what he's charged with? What?
Nothing. That's the point. Now I've released these documents so that we have some of them on the website now. You saw them from the Newsline program that we did recently. That he was brought before a 2 days later before a district. U.S. magistrate Judge Alan Ross, who is now a full U.S. district court judge.
This is a federal court, the Eastern District of New York, federal court, right.
And she's still there, by the way. So I tried to get these documents of all the things that transpired, and they were considered restricted, if you can imagine, no way to get them. But I was able to get the one that says on the 19th of November of that year, I think it was 1992, he was brought before, and anyway, his Judge Alan Ross completely dismissed him of any charges. The Wisconsin was standing by trying to get a hold of him because he was a resident of Wisconsin, but he really wasn't. He was a resident of Vienna at the time. But Wisconsin was trying to make a case that they needed to have him extradited back to Wisconsin because he hadn't paid some civil tax charges. And they had some other trumped up charge on him that wasn't even made any sense at all, where they were trying to say that he was part of a big crime.
All right, this is a short segment. We're going into a break here, but let me this is astounding. So he's thrown in a Swiss prison. He comes back. They immediately arrest him and drag him into a federal court, charging him with tax evasion.
The Wisconsin was trying to make a case to get him.
Right.
But this U.S. judge completely dismissed this case and let him go.
Right. Okay.
And,
well,
he was free. He was free to go.
All right. We'll take a quick time out and come back on the other side. One more segment with Lon Gibby flying solo, and then we'll bring in Ambassador Lee Wanta right here on The Conspiracy Show. Stay with us.
Providing the evidence and letting you draw your own conclusions. This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett on Zoomer Radio.
Lon Gibby from Gibby Media Group. He is the official spokesperson for Ambassador Lee Wanta, the $33 trillion man, President Reagan's secret agent, the man who brought down the Soviet Union without firing a shot, and is sitting on a vast fortune of $33 trillion, although it may be more. And so we were talking about, so he appears before this federal court in New York. Judge Ross has totally dismissed the case, but before he left the court,
and you can see that, you can see the dismissal. I mean, it's on our website.
Right,
you can look it up.
And she refers to him as, in the court documents, he's referred to as Ambassador Lee Wanta. For those that have
tried to discredit him, he's referred to as an ambassador. You know, and she also was asking Lee, and we haven't got this document yet because that's been restricted. But I will, under the Freedom of Information Act, we will have this document shortly. But basically, she said to Lee, she said, "What's this? What's this brief in your briefcase?" And which indicated that they had his briefcase. There's $16 billion in U.S. Treasury notes. What's this all about? And what are you an ambassador? Why are you an ambassador? She was flabbergasted. But, of course, when I called to ask about that case, her aide said she didn't know anything about it, couldn't remember it, and asked and just encouraged me to try to get a hold of the court records, which I did, you know, and I found out it was dismissed. But anyway, that particular, she just released him, but of course didn't give him his briefcase, and Lee just walked out the door. And when he walked out the door, there was the police department from the New York police arrested him immediately and said that he was on a warrant, you know, from the state of Wisconsin because he hadn't paid some taxes and they were arresting him. And he resided in the New York underground in that police station that's underground that nobody can ever communicate to. I think that's where they took Epstein for a while. But anyway, he was basically in down underground in the New York police station there for about 28 days and then sent back to Wisconsin and where he stood charges. And again, you could read about the court proceedings, a kangaroo court. Governor Tommy Thompson, who was a Republican working under Bush, they had this all planned out how they were going to get control of Lee and get his money. And so they, of course, his briefcase, still his private property, still has not been delivered back to him.
Now, let me just ask you, let me back up for a second. Yeah, why did Judge Ross dismiss? I guess she wasn't in on it. Was she being directed by someone at the Justice Department to dismiss the charge or to release him? How did that happen and why?
I think she just released him because my personal opinion after reading this information is that she couldn't see any reason to retain this man. This was a person that was obviously doing some high level work way beyond her knowledge. She was working under the president, Reagan. He also was an ambassador. He also had treasury notes in his, under his name that no one else should be named. No one could cash those unless they, you know, were somehow through criminal enterprise figured out a way to do it.
Before he left, I mean, when she asked him, "What's this? What? Why do you have $16 billion worth of treasury notes in your briefcase?" Someone else interrupted because they didn't want that to go on the record, right?
That's exactly right. There was a group there representing, you know, another part of our government that was there trying to make a case that he shouldn't be allowed to be released, that he should be retained for a much longer period of time. So when they released him, then they had to figure, by the way, there's no charges. He was dismissed and arrested from New York. New York's in trouble because New York City arrested him on no charges at all. Basically, he's a kidnapped, illegally kidnapped person.
Right. And just to move things along here, he ends up in Wisconsin under Governor Tommy Thompson, who is a friend of President George Herbert Walker Bush at the time. They're both, you know, trying to separate Lee from these trillions. So now they throw him in the clink on a trumped up charge of tax evasion in Wisconsin, where he ends up serving, what, 11 years?
Yeah, 11 years, and then he was on probation after that for a long time. And you know, his life, he's basically, he doesn't live a normal life. Even today, he's like a political prisoner. He doesn't have the freedoms. His human rights were stolen from him. All of his belongings, they destroyed his family. He lost his home. He lost, you know, his wife, divorced him. His wife, you know, that's a whole other part of the story that's really sad. But, and the only reason that he got out of prison at one point was because of Al Gore stepping up to the plate and, you know, making sure that he was safe and was able to get released. And this was in Wisconsin. That's another part of the story we can talk about later. But, anyway, all that briefcase, by the way, Governor Evers has been advised. You know, we've sent letters to him. He never responds.
He's the present governor. Yeah.
He's been advised that, you know, that Lee's charges were dismissed by Judge Alan Ross, and that the briefcase that he has with his personal belongings, including his treasury notes, need to be returned to him. Somebody's got those. They have not returned his personal property.
That's a small
amount of money compared to what they really stole from. We're going to talk about that later, and I'll let Lee explain how they have been able to manipulate that other money. But that's just what he had in his possession in his briefcase. That's been stolen from him, and he was kidnapped basically by the state of Wisconsin.
So after he gets, after he's released finally from a Wisconsin prison after 11 years, he's on probation. Is he allowed to leave the United States?
No, that's the other thing. But you got to remember, the good news is that Lee has actually, because of his work that he was doing under the Totten Doctrine, there's other people under his name that are still working outside of the United States under his name.
Trying to get that money back into the United States.
Yeah. And there, you know, remember that President Reagan was the last duly elected president of the United States. And so Lee has not been fired. He still works for the president.
Yeah. We'll get Lee on here to explain that, because I've never quite understood that. And I know Lee will explain it, but how Reagan served 8 years, the Constitution, you know, an amendment says you can only serve 8 years. He served his 8 years, but he believes, I guess, that the election, George Herbert Walker Bush stole the election, or sorry, George W. Bush stole the election from Al Gore.
H.W., first of all, wasn't qualified to run because his family was not allowed to run.
Oh, that's right. Trading with the Enemy Act. That's right. Poppy Bush, Prescott Bush, was charged by the U.S. Congress with trading with the enemy. Those were the Nazis. Basically was stripped of his money and so forth. And then, according to a plea bargaining arrangement, the Bushes were forbidden from ever holding public office again.
Correct.
Therefore, George Herbert Walker Bush was not eligible to be president, so he's not a duly elected official. And then
in the 1992 election was an election that was rigged. You know, the way that was set up for the Clintons to get it, Bill Clinton to win that election, you know, with Ross Perot, you know, some of the vote was stripped off it. He was only elected with 41% of the vote, you know. And so that election was a planned rigged election. Okay. And then the election of Al Gore was stolen, flat out stolen away from Gore. Gore actually won that election, and that election was stolen.
Okay, so because these presidents are all invalid, according to Lee, then his Totten doctrine is still valid. In other words, he's still a secret agent.
Oh, yeah, yeah. he still has a mandate that he, and he took an oath, and he has a mandate that he is still he will not bend on that.
And I've still trying to get the money
over
back.
And over about this, yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a timeout. We're at the top.
He's not going to accept any bribes or anything like. He's already been bribed, and I'll tell you about that later.
All right, we're at the top of the hour here. When we come back, Lon Gibby and I will be joined by Ambassador Lee Wanta, the $33 trillion man, Ronald Reagan's secret agent, right here on The Conspiracy Show. Don't go away.
Live from Toronto, Canada, Earth, The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett on Zoomer Radio.
Thanks for inviting me into your home, long-haul truck, RV, camper, taxi, your parents' well-appointed rec room with the simulated wood paneling, electric fireplace, and the painting of dogs playing poker, your loft, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. A big howdy to all of you listening in on our flagship station, AM 740 and 96.7 FM here in Toronto. And hi to those of you tuning in on one of our affiliate stations across North America. Hey, you streaming us on zoomerradio.ca, and those of you streaming us on my YouTube channel, Strange Planet. Just a reminder, once again, no live YouTube stream tonight. That will return next week. However, and wherever you're listening, I bid thee the warmest of welcomes, and I thank you for your fine company. Now, before we get back to Lon Gibby of Gibby Media, the official spokesman for Ambassador Lee Wanta, a quick reminder to register at my website, strangeplanet.ca. It's fast and easy, and once registered, you'll start receiving my free monthly newsletter, Inner Sanctum. The January issue is just hours away from being published, so you want to register as soon as you can, otherwise you'll have to wait for February. So again, register. And once you register, incidentally, once you register at strangeplanet.ca, not only do you get the free newsletter, you'll also be automatically entered into the monthly draw for free Strange Planet merchandise. Again, register right now at strangeplanet.ca. And one other thing, my podcast, Conspiracy Unlimited, drops 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And you can listen and subscribe at conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. Lon Gibby stays with us, the official spokesperson for Ambassador Lee Wanta, Ronald Reagan's secret agent, and the $33 trillion man. The website is eagle1towanta.com, eagle1towanta.com, all spelled out. And the official biography of Ambassador Wanta is Wanta, Black Swan, White Hat. And Lon Gibby, we are about to introduce the man himself, Ambassador Wanta, who we've reached on the line in a secret and secure location. Do we have him?
Yes, we do. Lee, are you there?
Yes. Good day, everybody.
Ambassador Wanta.
And Happy New Year, wherever you may be.
Happy New Year to you, and welcome back to The Conspiracy
Thank
Show.
You.
How are you, sir?
I'm good. I lost some weight, and I feel healthy and wise.
And I know you can't divulge your location. Can you? Are you in the continental United States? Can we narrow it down that far?
I'm wherever I need to be at any given time.
You are wherever you need to be. All right, we'll leave it at that then. I just want to pick up on a few threads that we discussed in the previous hour. Just briefly, tell me how you became President Reagan's secret agent.
Well, the Wisconsin senior Senator Alexander Wiley, when I was young, 12 years old, I was a member of junior achievement. He was there sponsoring the junior achievement, and I introduced him at the Milwaukee Auditorium as a guest speaker. And I stuttered, which I did in grade school, and Catholic nuns and all that good stuff. And the next morning, he met my mother and my dad, and his wife came to our house and offered my mother $500 to send me to Dale Carnegie so I wouldn't stutter. He felt sad and bothered because I was sitting right next to him when I introduced him at the Milwaukee Auditorium. And I was a member of Junior Achievement in Milwaukee, which is young kids creating jobs internally, manufacturing, coach. It's all training. And so he gave my parents $500, sent me Dale Carnegie on a scholarship. And I loved it because I never learned to shut up since.
And from there to Ronald Reagan. How did that happen?
Well, Senator Wiley was my sponsor. He was a senior citizen of the state of Wisconsin. He knew as a Waukesha County a deputy sheriff, a Milwaukee police officer, a rescue squad officer, Menomonee Falls Fire Department, and I had training and being a good American. And I was also a lay minister of the Catholic Church and a member of the Knights of Columbus and so on and so forth. And I taught CCD in the grade schools and stuff like that. So he introduced me to Senator Wiley introduced me to the White House. And I met with a Elizabeth Dole, who is the wife of Senator Dole, and they were interviewed, did all the testing, things like that. And suddenly I was meeting Dutch, telling me and Bill Casey, they were interested in my background and ability and the high grades I had. Also served a two-and diamond apprenticeship too, which was 5 years, which I was lucky to get. 542 people applied for it, and I came in fourth. So I felt honored that I could learn. I still have all my fingers, which is pretty good for that trade.
Do you remember your first meeting with Dutch, as you called him, President Reagan?
Yes, yes.
What was it like?
After I passed, it was with Elizabeth Dole and Bob Dole and a couple other people at the White House. I met him, and I really thought when he wanted me to get my photographs and passports, I felt it was going to meet, because he said something about RR, and I felt it was going to meet Roy Rogers because he was, a cowboy and all that stuff. And when I went to the Secret Service to get my photographs, it turned out to be Rick Reynolds. I was disappointed. I thought, being a kid, Roy Rogers. And then at the inaugural ball, they had me take off, in which I thought I was going to France. I ended up in Vienna, Austria. And I didn't know what the hell I was doing in Vienna, Austria, because I thought, according to my agenda for what I got from the Secret Service, I was going to Paris, France, and up in Vienna, Austria, because Vienna, Austria is a free zone. We can do little things. Everybody trades in Vienna, Austria.
But you didn't know so what I your established. Did you know what your role was at this point? Did you know what Reagan had in mind for you?
Certainly. That's why I was in meetings with him. And Bill Casey, the CIA director.
All right. And
I was there to destabilize the Soviet Union because they were the evil empire and they wanted to bury us with their own shovels. And I don't think that was a good idea as a cop, shall we say.
Okay, and we need to clarify one point in our sort of summary of how you managed to bring the Soviet Union down. I said that you were trading rubles, which is not technically correct.
No, we don't trade. We exchange. They want to get rid of the rubles. And they want shillings, Austrian shillings, which I had a bundle on. Or they want French francs, whatever they needed. We would exchange. Like, you give me a $5 bill, and give you 5 singles. Oh, I'm sorry, you want two $2 bills and a dollar bill. That's $5. It was a straight transfer. And the military had nothing. They could not even get tires for their aircraft and stuff of that nature. So they were willing to trade anything, because then they could use a higher currency in Hungary and Budapest and stuff like that. And I was willing to do that. So I have accounts at Kronenstadt, and I have a line of credit for $250 billion. I got, $150 billion from the Bank of China, because Deng Xiaoping and I met at Western Hills a few times. He and I got along great. I bought back stuff. In fact, I believe he bought him some good stuff from the United States. And we got along great. He was at Western Hills that he lived in his big, beautiful place. And he would tell me that Bush was an idiot. Bush would be here as a representative of the United States, and they would be here and there. And he got so mad, he said, I asked the aides because Bush knew nothing. He said he was a head. I go, ooh, what does that mean? Because Bush knew nothing.
Right.
And Reagan had me back and forth to China, and I flew United Airlines back and forth. In fact, I remember when I flew from the States to the first time going to Peking, I got stopped at the airport. Before that, the United Airlines has to change the planes and get fuel. And the Chinese guys came up with the little burp guns and all this stuff, told me I couldn't get on a plane because I didn't have a visa. nice. I was supposed to meet Deng Xiaoping, and they kind of laughed at me. And I wouldn't stop. And I kept arguing with these guys. I'm here for a reason. And because United Airlines had to get gas in that city because the next drop, they couldn't get fuel. So I'm waiting and waiting. Everybody's getting onto the bus to go back onto the airplane. And I go, son of a gun, I'm not going. All of a sudden, a big guy, Chinese guy with burp guns and everything comes up to me. Come. The plane waiting for you. Apparently, they checked me out. I have a visa to meet Deng Xiaoping. I had to be there. Plus, I had brandy Manhattans in little cans that I took from Wisconsin, which the taxes paid, of course. Mm-hmm. And I was going to give them as a gift that Dutch wanted. And Dutch wanted me to drop off some cartons of Lucky Strikes, because I'm not telling you what was in the carton of Lucky Strikes, because they came from the president to me and to Deng Xiaoping directly, and not a snoop.
All right.
And I don't smoke.
Okay. So, and then you were extended this seed money of $150 billion. That allowed
right,
you to begin.
The credit bank in my name, Leo Amo Monta, W-A-N-T-A.
Right.
And then in Vienna.
After exchanging this currency exchange, and this was the mechanism by which the Soviet ruble collapsed. Is that correct?
Absolutely collapsed. They couldn't buy anything. Nobody wanted the dumb stuff.
Right. And so at that point, the Soviet Union and Mikhail Gorbachev recognized they were sunk. So they waved the white flag.
They were insolvent, and they knew that. And I offered Gorbachev when I met him at the Kremlin. In fact, when I went there to meet him, I was supposed to meet him like at 2:30 at the Kremlin and check with my guys at the hotel because we flew in from Vienna. And they say, I don't have a reservation. So I go, what do you mean I don't have a reservation? I'm getting real bold about this. My Dale Carnegie is stepping in. And I says, I have reservations to meet Gorbachev at 2:30. And they laugh and blew me off. I said, wait a minute. And I made so much noise. A guy came out of the office. He said, what's the qualm? I showed my passport. I said, I have a reservation. My guys are here. We're from Vienna, Austria, and we're going to meet Gorbachev. And then he went behind the counter, looked at the files, and he starts screaming in Russian at this guy. Here it is. Bata, bata. Bata, B-A-H-T-A, bata, bata. Sir, we'll have everything set up for you right away. We apologize. Because Wanta in the Soviet Union, in Russian, is bata, B-A-H-T-A. How do I know that?
Ah. All right. So when you met Gorbachev, did he understand or did he have any inkling that you were the one that was responsible for collapsing the Soviet economy?
Yeah, he already talked to Rick, the Dutch.
Was he angry with you?
It was just, hell no. He was happy to see me. And happy that I agreed. In fact, he agreed to accept $10 billion. And I said, yes, everything's okay. And then I said, oh, my God, I can't do this. He said, what do you mean you can't do this? I need your banking coordinates. And it was a Gorbachev. So he left the room, came back with some toilet tissue.
Sorry, let me just jump in here. There's someone breathing very heavily on the other line. I'm not sure what's happening
there.
That must
be long.
Okay, sorry,
long. But anyhow, Gorbachev accepted the $10 billion. And we got him out of there, and he's in Presidio in California, safe and sound. And we saved millions of lives. And then what a firing shot. I'm pretty cool about that.
And
I could have got shot myself.
Right. What would have been the problem with Reagan announcing that this is how it ended? Why do we not hear about this story? Why don't we learn about this? Sorry?
It's an act of war. It would be an act of war that we were taking down the Soviet Union. That'd be an act of war. That's why I was in Austria, so it wasn't a United States operation. And you have to keep in mind the Chinese were very upset that the Soviets were always attacking them at their borders and killing the people and making internal moves into the border. That's why China gave me $150 billion at Kronstadt Bank to redo the borders. Every country has borders. They have to maintain those borders. Like the United States, I offered Trump $35 billion for the borders down. And God knows if he got them, FedEx sent them stuff. I was willing to pay $35 billion to save established borders. That's part of our Constitution. We're a constitutional republic. That means
right. We
need established borders. Makes sense to me.
Okay. Now, let me ask you about your ambassadorship. Explain that. Were you an ambassador?
No, I was up in Toronto. They needed money. They needed help. The Italians were going to give Somalia back to them. They needed somebody that they could trust. They needed they had some gold. They were selling some, creating some gold at credit stuff. Credit Suisse Bank, I told them, you don't have to. We'll take a loan against that. My attorney, Tony Minacci, and Sandy Sordi, and Giovanni Ferro was all there with me in Toronto when President Haji of Somalia was trying to save his country and the board of the senior powers to be. You know, they have like a commission. You know, they have a name for them. The people like the board of directors. And they asked me if I would be the ambassador to Somalia because Canada was helping Somalia with their food and stuff of that nature. And I asked them, what else can we do? They needed money. So I thought, that we would rebuild the naval supply depot in Mogadishu to save them from everybody and also take half of the airport. And we would pay the instruction and give half to the United States Air Force, which would protect Somalia. And even Ambassador Stevens knew all this stuff, and he gets pumped off. And because he wasn't playing their game on the arms deals with Turkey that he refused to do. That's why Stevens was killed.
Oh, in
he
Libya,
refused
yes.
To play the game.
Okay, so just so I'm clear, Lee, you were the ambassador from Somalia to Switzerland and Canada.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
Right.
Now, let's just back up here.
Perfect.
So after the collapse of the Soviet Union and Mikhail Gorbachev gets his $10 billion to walk into the sunset and retires to California with his own little foundation. What role?
The money cleared.
Right. And so where are the accumulated trillions at this point? Are they in banks all over the world?
I understand from my associates at Interpol, because I used to work with Interpol when we tried to reach Mark Rich. So I had warrants for his arrest in Switzerland. And that's probably why I wasn't loved either, because Mark Rich was in a court of a block criminal. And I had people with me, but we had warrants to arrest Mark Rich. And he got a pardon from Bill Clinton, which is very strange because the FBI director told us to arrest him. At that time, I was cooperating with Customs, Bill LaCates, and the Secret Service, another gentleman. We had open, live arrest warrants at Interpol, and I was arresting Mark Rich to bring him back to the United States for tax evasion.
Okay, so, but the question is, and Lon, if you'd like to jump in here as well, what happened to the trillions that you had accumulated through these currency exchanges and buying up certain, you know, bank guarantees and so forth?
Okay, according to IMF, Christine Lagarde and the World Bank, I'm worth $433 trillion on the books right now. And I said that I want this money sent back to Austria since the United States refuses to help me and take it. And I'll pay 60% repatriation taxes or something to negotiate. Because none of this money was made in the United States. There was no act of war. Everything was done at New Republic, USA Financial Group, GES, MBH, in Vienna, Austria. You notice New Republic, USA, New Republic, United States of America, we're Constitutional Republic, Mr. Reagan. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's why we did all the trading out of Austria. And in Hungary, we did no trading. No money was made in the United States. Not a dime.
Lee, it might be interesting that just as Lee in 2006 was ordered, you know, by a federal judge to repatriate his money here in the United States. And he brought in 2006 $4.5 trillion. He allowed to be released into a bank in Richmond, Virginia, which was promptly stolen.
No, it was converted.
Or they call it converted.
Yeah, the United States Congress converted the money. And they said that in court, that yes, it wants his money. However, they converted the money. They stole it.
So wait a minute, just so people listening at home can follow here. We're jumping ahead to 2006. In the previous hour, we discussed how you were essentially kidnapped. You were thrown in a prison in Switzerland. And then from there, you were freed, thanks in part to...
No, Wisconsin prison. Yeah, I was free to come to the United States and be in Wisconsin prison and an Oklahoma prison.
Right.
They kept me moving around. They kicked me butt.
Right. So you were imprisoned in Wisconsin on trumped-up charges for 11 years. Then you were released.
No, I was sent to another prison. I've never been released.
Okay.
I got released when Al Gore found me in Oklahoma.
Aha. All right. So from there, you went to Oklahoma. How long did you serve in Oklahoma?
Oh, probably a year and a half, 2 years.
Another year and a half.
It's terrible.
Again, trumped up charges on tax evasion?
Well, they knew I was an ambassador. The prison in Oklahoma knew, and Sarah, Oklahoma knew. Even my rank, I had a private cell. Nobody had a private cell. And I had the rank of an ambassador because they knew I was an ambassador, so I was being held with special privileges or whatever else they were doing. In fact, at the tail end, when Gore came to Sarah, Oklahoma, to verify it was still me, he gives me a Pepsi and a bag of potato chips. The Secret Service has armed all the guards. He goes back to some judge in Oklahoma, and they threw me out of Oklahoma because I wasn't supposed to be there.
And did they?
I'm not a prisoner.
During your time in both Wisconsin and Oklahoma prisons, were they constantly dangling that carrot that if you give us the money, we'll let you go?
Oh, yeah. I told them I have a mandate. I have things to do. I got to do the high-speed rail. I got to do the Veterans Administration. I got to do the student loans. They got our infrastructure. And Don can confirm that we set up AIB, the American Integrity Bank, so we can clean up the banks. Because once we get rid of the Federal Reserve, which is not a bank, it's never been a bank, we have AIB. And now you've got Trump saying, he's going to do it.
Okay, I don't want to get too far into the weeds here. Let's just, if we could. So when you were promised that if you give us, I mean, how did they expect you to give them the money? Did you need to give them the location of the banks or?
Well, they wanted me to release all the money to them.
But how would you all do that?
I'd be a dead man. They gave me some agreement in Wisconsin. If I take them to all my banks, I'm free to go.
All right.
Free to go.
Because
that
you
was
have
part of the Alford plea. That's on the website. And it's on the last chapter in Lee's book would be helpful to read. It explains that in chapter 17. And it's available on the website. You can just read it, you know.
Okay. So,
that last chapter. Yeah.
All right. So if you had told them where all this money is squirreled away, what banks and so forth, you could have walked, but you refused to because, again, your mandate is to return that money to the American people. We're going to take a time out. We'll come back.
No.
Okay,
my mandate is not to return the people to the people. My mandate is to build a high-speed rail.
That's what I'm saying, by extension. Let's just take a break and we'll come back.
We'll just hand it out to the people.
All right. We'll come back and continue this conversation with President Reagan's secret agent, Ambassador Lewanda, and his spokesperson, Lon Gibby, right here on The Conspiracy Show. Don't go away.
From Yeti to Nessie, pyramids to pandemics, all is revealed on The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serra from Zoomer Radio.
We're back with the $33 trillion man, President Reagan's secret agent, Ambassador Lewanda, on the line from a secret and secure location. Also joining us on the line is his spokesperson, publisher, filmmaker, Lon Gibby, and the website eagle1towanta.com. That's all spelled out, eagle1towanta.com. And the official biography is called Wanta, Black Swan, White Hats. And we were talking about you were falsely imprisoned first in Switzerland, then you were brought to New York, and then you were apprehended again and imprisoned in Wisconsin, and then released and then imprisoned in Oklahoma, all on trumped-up charges. And again, you were being basically pressured to release the money that you had amassed, trillions of dollars squirreled away in banks all over the world. You refused to do that because you had a mandate. And your mandate, again, just restate that if you would, Ambassador.
My mandate was to rebuild our constitutional republic, get rid of the Federal Reserve after an audit, pay any lawful debts that the Federal Reserve accumulated that really belong to us, do the high-speed rail, which is 250,000 jobs almost immediately, and rebuild on the infrastructure, including the Alabama Highway, so we could run the train tracks in between for the MX Mobile missiles. Now you got Putin. He's got MX Mobile missiles all over the Silk Road and all that stuff. That was our plan.
Right.
To save our country. Because the high-speed rail tracks, besides passengers, would have have cargo things on there so we can launch an MX Mobile missile immediately.
If I could ask, how much of that money would have been for you, your own personal use?
It's all my money. That's why it was done in New Republic in Austria. Then I have to pay 60% in Austria or pay the 65% in the United States on our mandated missions, not to give the Congress the screw around and give it away to anybody and everybody. That's not property of the United States. That's why we ran the operation in Vienna, Austria, because that's what they wanted. It was a free zone. There was no crimes committed against the Russian Federation or the Soviet Union or any other country. And now we're staging a war again because people don't understand the truth. They're afraid of the truth. They can't be, because all the student loans, the high-speed rail, the Veterans Administration, the infrastructure, I set up Ameritrust, which is a trust to do all that stuff. And now you got these Cottrell guy and all these other guys claiming that they run that Ameritrust group. Trust group, that's me. I own all the shares. They own nothing. I fired them after they met with the Queen of England to tear us down and rip off our country. I fired them for cause. They were stealing money from the corporation and putting it everywhere else but where it belongs. It belongs in my pocket so I can do the bills.
And we're talking now the 33 trillion, although some have estimated it at 400 and something trillion?
Yeah, it's 433 trillion right now at the World Bank. IMF has confirmed that. So has the French.
433 trillion.
You know, under the Wanta, Mitterrand, Reagan protocols. There are three parties: President Reagan, Francois Mitterrand, the President of France, and myself. Nobody else knew about this. Nobody.
Now, there's another.
Not even the Chinese.
Another very important ruling by a Judge Lee. This is the district court in Virginia, is it? The Federal District Court of Virginia?
Yeah, right. I'm the sole principal of Ameritrust, and the money belongs to me, the person.
Okay. Lon, could I get you maybe to explain what happened in that court?
Well, when Lee went to court there, Judge Lee basically in his final statement in the case said that Lee should bring all of his funds back in and repatriate his funds into the United States and pay his taxes, because that's what we need. I mean, with that amount of money being paid into the tax base of our country would be a phenomenal blessing for the United States. And that's what Lee wanted to do. But he's been trying to do that. But they're making it almost impossible because they continue to try to hijack it or convert it or whatever you want to call it. And so he may be forced to pay his taxes in Austria, repatriate it there, and then, you know, that means that they get the tax money instead of the United States, and it's 50%. In Austria.
So 433 trillion, Austria would get 50%. That's 215 trillion. You would bring that to the United States, and then they would get their what? There's 60% or whatever?
The United States would get nothing.
So he needs to repatriate it into our country so that we get the tax money. And then he'll do the other projects besides that. That doesn't, the mandated projects. That's the thing about, and it's hard for them to understand that anybody would do that, because they want to get control of the money, because money means power and the ability to control others. And
right. If he brought that money back, it would just disappear into the treasury, right? And no one would ever see it. Is that the problem?
Well, that's correct, unless it was all made public, which is what we're trying to do. Well, the story has to get out so that people understand that money needs to be repatriated. You know, he needs to pay his taxes. And then what he does with the rest, by the way, taxes in the United States would be 35%.
35%, okay.
Yeah, instead of 50% in Austria. So, But the problem you got is, you know, the Federal Reserve is a club. It's not, it was formed in 1913. It's not a bank. It's not a reserve. You know, it's a clearinghouse. So they're very good at clearing money and passing it around and doing what's called derivatives. And that's something you should talk about on one of your shows, Richard, is talk about what a derivative is, because if a bank, a lot of the major banks have those on their balance sheet. And basically, it's just taking this money on paper and selling it over and over again. It's a Ponzi scheme, basically.
Right, right. Now, so, getting back to the trillions here, the money, what's preventing you right now, Ambassador, from paying the taxes on it in Austria and then taking it to the U.S. and paying your taxes there? Who's preventing you from doing that exactly?
No, nobody anymore, because I already agree with Austria that the World Bank will send them the money and will reopen my accounts. And I have a partner over there in Vienna, reopen everything else and just stay in Austria. Nobody wants me to pay my taxes. So why should I fight City Hall, which is corrupt?
So you'll pay your taxes in Austria and then you'll have the remainder. And then what will you do with it?
I'll still do the high-speed rail, the things that I want to do, but I'm not giving it to politicians. So it's called pound missing. See, once they get that money, it's going to be gone. They're not interested in building it for the American people, or we're a constitutional republic. I am. That's why I took a mandate to serve the people, all fellow Americans. That's what Reagan wants, and that's what I'm going to do. But if I can't spend the money in the United States, I might as well send it to Austria and pay off bills from there.
Right. Okay, and what's preventing you from doing that right now, today?
Nothing right now, because we're rebuilding everything in Austria to do that. Because the United States, we had this guy Steele, Bob Steele, came to my place and offered me that he would help me with Trump and give me $1 billion to take a walk. I told him, you take a walk to the airport. It's crazy.
Well,
I should give him $1 billion.
He actually had, you know, somebody that represented that they were
CIA
with Trump.
Spy. He's a CIA
We can't verify, you know, it can't be verified for sure that it was from Trump, but he came with a Trump hat and all his stuff from the White House.
And the flags and all that stuff.
But it's probably wasn't from Trump himself, I don't think, myself, but we don't know.
He said he was. He said he would get a deal with Trump, and I'd take $1 billion to take a walk. I'd be a dead man.
See, Lee's 79 right now. You know, he's been, but he's still going strong, and his mind is sharp, and he wants to finish his mandate. And he's not going to, you know, they offered him $1 billion, basically. They told him to take a walk.
All right.
If he'd turn over all the keys to all of his funds.
All the keys to your funds. In other words, give them the location of the banks and so forth.
And stand up on their behalf.
Right.
Give them the money.
So does, in your estimation, is the current administration, President Trump, aware of this situation and the history?
I know he's aware because I sent him stuff on the border that I want to do that. But keep in mind, you can't see President Trump because the last duly elected president of the United States was President Reagan. None of the elections mean a dang thing to me because I know from the Electoral College they're bullshit.
Well, you can't use those terms on radio. Okay. Sorry.
I'm a
Yeah.
So are you saying that President Trump can't be trusted either? Is that what you're saying?
The reason I feel that way, he took two of my employees that's on his transition team, Cottrell, and a Melville. Both of them on his transition team, both of them met with the Queen and some Dr. Wolfen in London. As my representatives, they can't be. I fired them both. They do not represent me or the people.
Okay, I've got to jump in here. We've got to take a timeout. Pardon the interruption. We'll come right back with Ambassador Wanta Lahn-Gibbe right here on The Conspiracy Show. We are back with Ambassador Lee Wanta and Lahn-Gibbe, and the website is Eagle One.
Follow the truth. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
We are back with Ambassador Lee Wanta and Lahn-Gibbe, and the website is Eagle One to Wanta. eagleonetowanta.com, eagleonetowanta.com, and the authorized biography is Wanta, Black Swan, White Hat. Lon Gibby is the official spokesperson for Ambassador Wanta, and he joins us on the line, as well as the ambassador himself, Ronald Reagan's secret agent, the $33 trillion man. He's calling us from a secret and secure location. I just wanted to move quickly over to Ukraine and find out what if anything, the situation in Ukraine may have to do with the $33 trillion, because, of course, Joe Biden and his son Hunter Biden, who was on the board of directors for this energy company, they were doing business with Ukraine. It's often considered to be, or it was anyway, one of the most corrupt regimes anywhere in the world. When Joe Biden was vice president, Ukraine was his file. He was in charge. He insisted that the attorney general in Ukraine be fired in order to free up, I guess it was about $1 billion in aid. And coincidentally, of course, the energy company in question where Hunter Biden was representing, that was being investigated by this attorney general. Does any of this have anything to do with you, Ambassador Wanta?
I would hope not, because Ukraine is a member of the Russian Federation, and what they were doing to protect Ukraine, you have to understand, that lady from the State Department on behalf of Clinton went over there with Soros and try to take Ukraine and make him a battleground, and they are a member of the Russian Federation. They had no authority.
Victoria Nuland, at least.
That's Victoria, the name, right. Victoria yeah. Nuland from the State Department went over there and bragging. We got it on tape and film that she's buying the oil companies and everything. That's illegal. We have no right. The United States has no right to go into Ukraine and change everything. At the same time, you had Hillary Clinton selling uranium to Russia for a profit. How many crooks do we have to look at and ignore? And that's verified, too. She sold uranium one stolen from the United States for a profit.
And what do your sources tell you about what the current investigation into what has been going on in Ukraine? Do you think that anyone in the Hillary Clinton camp or the Obama camp will be indicted over this?
Certainly. Victoria Nuland was on the film, and we have copies of that, telling the oil companies that they're giving them all kinds of money to change the management of the oil and the petrol. What right do we have to rearrange Ukraine? None. But Victoria Nuland of the State Department, on orders from Hillary Clinton, went over there and told these oil companies that they're in charge now. You can't do that.
It goes back to the original agreement that general agreement of cooperation that was signed by Lee and the other Russian Federation people that signed it.
Granary Filchin.
And it basically gives them the right to do business with their neighbors, just like the United States and Canada. We work together. You know, we sell products back and forth and all that. But they've set up a situation that could create a world war right out of the Ukraine. It's a very volatile location. And, of course, world war might even play into their plan. You know, so.
All right, we've got about 2 minutes here, and then we'll break one more time, and then we'll have another 10-minute segment after. So, Lon, where would you like to go next in this discussion with regards to Ambassador Wanta's $33 trillion?
I'm thinking that it would be interesting to bring up, proofs that verify Lee is who he is. For example, Tennessee, Governor Don Sundquist, who left a message on Lee's phone about expecting to get a bunch of money out of Lee's money. So a lot of people don't realize. They think, this is an interesting thing, but there's proof. You can just go on the website and listen to the recording that they accidentally left on Lee's embassy phone. They can hear, here's a former respected governor, Republican governor, and also the future head of the Republican Party, expecting to get, trying to extort money out of Lee. I mean, if that's not proof, I don't know what is. Nobody's done jack about that since that came out, and that was clear back in 2014.
Right, and you know? we in fact, you were kind enough to allow me to play that audio. We did play that on this program, I guess back in 2015, 2016, the last time you were on. All right, we'll take a quick time out. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the other documented proof in the book on the website that substantiates that Ambassador Wanda is who he says he is and did what he said he did. We'll do that when we come back. The Conspiracy Show. My name is Richard Serrett. Don't go away.
They were expecting originally $30 billion, but then they ended up saying, well, we'll take 10. And then they later in the conversation said, well, we'll take 5. That's a lot of money.
And they said that they got to be paid. Sundquist was the governor of Tennessee, but he also, they all worked for Bush.
Yeah.
Or Scherf, either way.
Well, he owes us all of it, but we'll settle for half of it just to get out of this. Just to get away and forget about it. He won't ever have to hear it, worry about us again.
Right.
But he does owe us that money. And if he does, if he says he doesn't, then I'm going to ask him, what does he think, what do you think, Lee, that you owe us? Anything? For all that work? Anything?
I just can't imagine anybody as smart as he is going to be screwing around over $10 billion, you know?
Or even 5.
Or 5 even, you know?
Yeah.
Sure. If I had that kind of money, with us too, I'd give them 10 so fast it'd make your head spin. Just get rid of
them. Me too.
If you want rid of us, give us 5 and we'll call it even.
Yeah, that's it.
No less. No less.
That's it.
There's no negotiations. One-time offer. Take it or leave it.
There you go.
No, not take it or leave it.
No.
You better take it, I mean.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's pretty serious.
And they definitely believe that if the money was real, or they wouldn't have been talking like that.
Well, yeah, they knew the money was real, because they knew Bush. They knew exactly how to get the money and get their share.
They're the ones that call the shots.
Yeah, the deep state and the puppet master. Who do you think you're talking to? I'm the boss. I'm a puppet master. I've been here for 50 years. I get people to pay, people to do. I know Pelosi. I know Schumer. Big deal.
And we're back with Lon Gibby and Ambassador Lee Wanta. And that piece of audio you just heard was a voice mail recording from the former governor of Tennessee. Do I have that right, Lon?
That's correct. Don Sundquist and also Sheldon Sontag, who was a senator from the state of South Dakota, is on there as well.
And how did we get that? How did you get that recording?
It was accidentally left on Lee's embassy phone. They were trying to get a hold of Lee, and they called me. And Lee said, do not talk to them today, because we'd had several conversations with them before. They were trying to say that they needed Lee to pay them $30 billion, because they believed that Lee had his money and that they were the ones that got it released. So when they called, it was on Labor Day of 2014. I didn't pick up, and they got frustrated, and they were talking on. They didn't realize when they called Lee's embassy phone that they completely didn't realize that it was recording everything they said. They thought they'd hung up. It was like a blessing from God that Lee was able to obtain that, because it really shows in a nutshell just how corrupt, you know, they were, and that they expected to get $5 billion at minimum, and they were holding out for 10, and if Lee didn't pay him, there was going to be some consequences associated with it.
All right,
so they obviously believe the money was real.
Right Okay. And you verified that those that those two gentlemen on that answering machine message, they are who they claim they were?
Oh, absolutely. There's no question of that.
Okay.
It's been verified. That's their voices.
So the other piece of important documentation here, I think, it goes back to the federal court in Virginia and the ruling by Justice Lee. Just explain again.
That's by Alan Ross.
No. Not the one in New York. I'm talking about the more recent court.
The one in 2006.
Yes. Yeah. Explain what that ruling was.
Okay, Lee, do you want to explain that?
Go right ahead.
Well, in that ruling, Lee was told that he needed to bring all of his, shut down his corporations, that means Ameritrust, all the different companies that he owns, and to repatriate his money into the United States and pay his taxes, and that's all he's been trying to do.
That court document is reproduced on the CD-ROM, which comes with the biography, correct?
Yeah, it's on the website as well. It's one of the documents from that court case. If you go to Chapter 17, it talks about it, and there's a link that's associated with it. And that's on the website. You don't have to buy the book or anything to get to that.
And in the document, this court document from the federal court in Virginia, is Lee addressed as ambassador?
I can't verify that, Lee. I don't remember.
Absolutely, ambassador, because he was very upset with the CIA director saying that I report to him. And Judge Lee says, I know this guy. I met him at the White House. He does not work for you. Oh, Your Honor, I made a mistake. Yeah, right.
Are the transcripts also included, or is it just the ruling?
The transcripts are not on that particular thing, but the transcripts exist and have all of the final details. But that particular transcript, as far as is there, the one pertaining to that release of his funds and repatriating his money.
And is a dollar figure? Actually, is a dollar figure mentioned?
No,
in the,
there's no dollar figure.
Oh, yeah, $4.5 trillion.
Well, it doesn't say that on there, does it? Well,
yeah,
I can't remember
seeing
that.
The first tranche was $4.5 trillion. The test tranche.
Well, that was a letter that you'll see on there, that where this group was asking Lee to bring the $27 trillion into the country, and Lee agreed to do it. And certain people were going to get certain money. Lee, it shows Lee getting $4.5 trillion, and then it shows this other group getting $11 trillion, and somebody else getting, some guy named Tropas, and all these different people, and that document was a letter that was submitted, and many Congress people in Congress received that letter, and that's another exhibit that's on that Chapter 17 that's on the website.
So for all the people listening who think that the ambassador is not an ambassador and that he's delusional and or that he's making all of this up, and this is just fantasy and it's a good story but it's not true, again, they will find these court documents verifying all of this included in the biography on a CD-ROM, Wanta White or Black Swan White Hat, correct?
Correct.
And how do they get a copy of the book again?
Well, they can get the paperback by going to GibbyMedia.com. That's our, and just going to the store, and they could order the actual book itself. It's a very thick book, 538 pages, and it has a digital disc in it that we went through the effort to put all of the exhibits all in one place, so that, you know, it's one of the few books that you actually get to have all the backup information. Or you can download it for $12 off of Amazon or iBooks or Barnes & Noble. Just enter in Lee Wanta, and it'll come up on any of those sites.
Ambassador, final question to you. How do you survive these days? You don't have access to those funds. How do you live?
I pray a lot, I have friends.
And I lied. I have one more question. Sorry. Just looking at the clock here. Well, I mean, is there a resolution in sight?
Are you asking
Lee? They all know it's my money. So why they're stalling is their state agent provocateurs against the people of the United States.
Are you free to go back to Austria?
Yeah, am I free to what?
Go back to Austria.
Go back to Austria.
Certainly. In fact, I couldn't get a visa to go back there because I never left.
All right. Gentlemen, I hope we'll talk again soon, and hopefully there'll be a positive resolution to this amazing story. Thank you so much. Thank you both.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.